This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:35 a.m. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of August. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani and Julian Ng. So yesterday, Japan's government announced 4.6 trillion yen in extra spending for the current fiscal year. Now, this is all part of the 28 trillion yen stimulus package that Prime Minister Shinzo Abe flagged in a speech last week. But it's only a small fraction of the headline number. So 4.6 trillion yen, which works to be about 45 billion US dollars. And that's just a fraction of the 28 trillion that he had initially mentioned. So I don't know whether
it's nothing.
Yes, I don't know whether
nothing.
People
it's
were
just 45
disappointed
billion.
Disappointed in that.
You know, it's almost never as big as it's announced. Recent track record have proven that. For instance, the so-called 28 trillion package, only about 4 trillion has been released. If you think about it, April 2009, for instance, where Shinzo Abe announced, over 55 trillion yen, only about 15 trillion was released. So they announced big stuff, but the freshwater new spending money will only be a fraction of that.
Maybe they're releasing it in pockets. You know, there's a huge headline number, but then they're releasing bits and bobs, like a trickle-down effect.
Well, you're talking about the GDP size of almost 5 trillion US dollars, right? So announcing a 250 billion stimulus package is not going to do anything to the economy. And if you compare that to the kind of quantitative easings that Japan has undertaken, you're talking about like 800 to 900 billion a year US dollars. That makes it 60 to 70 billion a month, right?
So I can't even fathom that kind of money.
I know, right? You won't find that kind of money in your bank account. So this is really about the transferring of monetary policy to one of fiscal, because earlier on, I think Japanese BOJ governor Hirohiko Karuda has put his hands up in his air and said, look, this is not working, right? This kind of like pumping the money into the economy to spur inflation is not working. People are not spending. The economy is growing 0.2% or 0.3%. So the government has got to pick up the mantle. But then
and that's why, you know, not just Kuroda that is saying this is not working. IMF, for instance, have come out with a counter proposal that basically runs against that Abenomics proposal. If you think about it, IMF's proposal wants to do a lot of other stuff, including revamping the labor market, raising wages, improving consumption tax increases. All this because they're trying to see.
I mean, the IMF is just saying things, right? It's just creating words. They say, do this, and then this will work. But it doesn't work that way. It hasn't worked in Japan. And worse still, they're proposing to raise the GST in Japan. Now, we know what happened when Japan raised the GST the last time. The economy went into a technical recession and still reeling from the effects of it. Now, the IMF is saying, raise your GST from 7 or 8% to 15%, 19% over the next few years. How is this going to go down with the Japanese consumers?
Well, I don't know. So I'm hoping to see that this new injection of fiscal action will actually do something to help, you know, prime the economy. We're looking at, you know, they want to spend things in terms of addressing the demographic challenge, the aging population in Japan. Yeah. I'm glad that you know, now they're trying to address it. Huge infrastructure projects. You've got things like the high-speed maglev train line that's going to be constructed in Japan. So they want to boost the economy, hopefully, by pumping a lot of money into these projects.
Well, that's another problem, right? Because the debt to GDP of Japan is over 200%.
Yes, that's a good
point. It's the highest in the world. So how do you transfer monetary policy to one of a fiscal when the government is kind of cash strapped because they have to service all these loans?
Yeah.
How do you address the loan situation? And it's a chicken and egg thing. To address the loan situation, you got to raise GST, you got to raise that VAT, and by doing that, you're also at the same time killing the economy.
Mm. So to lace on all this, right? The wage population is the working population is also aging, and that's why, you know, we need to have some details. When they talk about, you know, to help address the nation's demographic challenges, I was searching high and low for the details on this, but you know, not much can be heard or seen, because it's not easy trying to solve, you know,
How do you solve demographic challenges?
And by throwing, you know, 33.6 billion, right?
More population. Yeah, so encouraging people to have more babies.
Yeah.
Well, they can't do that if they're working 20 hours a day.
That's true.
And if they're aging.
You'll find some time. Okay, 7:41 right now, moving from Japan to India, where the Central Bureau of Investigations there has applied for warrants of arrest against Ananda Krishnan, Maxis Communication Berhad, Astro All Asia Network, and its CEO, Augustus Ralph Marshall. Now, these arrest warrants were handed over over the Aircel Maxis money laundering case involving former Indian telecoms minister Dayanidhi Maran and his brother Kalanithi.
So the CBI in India, it's just like the FBI in the US. The four people, as you rightly pointed out, Melissa, are the Maran brothers, two of them, Ralph Marshall, which is Astro All Asia Networks, and of course AK himself. And the arrest warrant is over the Aircel Maxis money laundering case involving the former telecoms minister Dayanidhi Maran, as well as his brother, another Maran brother. And the CBI has explained to the judge that these arrest warrants were sought because summons were not served on the accused because the accused are not in India. And this has invoked some sort of a special court to have a sitting and to listen to the CBI's case. And the case, according to the CBI at least, they're very intact. They just want to interview, so-called, and examine AK over this so-called money laundering case.
Dayanidhi was the ex-telecoms minister of India, mm-hmm. and this is about spectrums in India being sold on the cheap to Aircel, which is Maxis's subsidiary, one of those subsidiaries, and kickbacks have been alleged. So this case relates to that corruption case, and in fact, the CBI is really India's version of the MACC, right? They're going out there to sort out people who, in their words, commit economic offences, and this will include offences like corruption. And because the spectrums were alleged to be sold on the cheap, they are seeking the help of Ananda Krishnan and Ralph Marshall to help out in that investigation, right. Putting out these arrest warrants on them.
So I don't really understand. So how does that work? So the CBI has issued the arrest warrants. Why is the Malaysian police getting involved? Because transactions happened in India, right? So yeah.
Because Malaysia does not have an agreement with India on this kind of thing. So the right procedure for the Indians to take is to come to Malaysia, go to court and seek permission to arrest Ananda Krishnan and Ralph Marshall. As of now, they have not done it yet.
And that's exactly what the IGP has reiterated. You're right, Julian. It involves a civil suit. Therefore, a due process has to follow, including involving a Malaysian government. It's not a criminal case.
It sounds
like a deja vu, but it is what it is. It's a civil suit, not a criminal case, and because of that, Tan Sri Khalid says that Malaysia doesn't have an agreement to that.
I don't understand that statement that it's not a criminal case, because when you want to arrest someone, it sounds criminal, right? Otherwise, why would you want to arrest them?
Well, we've been through this discussion, right? The difference between, people trying to make the difference between a civil lawsuit and a criminal case all boils down to, you know, burden of proof and et cetera.
Essentially, a criminal case is when there is an affront to the state. A civil case is when another
private individuals or private parties
are aggrieved. Mm-hmm. In this sense, CBI believes that it's the burden of proof to show that the private individual, in this case Aircel, was aggrieved is a lot easier and a lot simpler to prove in the court of law as opposed to the state being cheated out of their tax revenues.
They have a police force. The CBI has a police force, so I don't know. Anyhow, Maxis's share price has not done well over the past 1 year or so. And Aircel, as of the latest audited report, contributes about 10% to Maxis's report. Aircel contributes 10% to Maxis's revenue. So I'm just wondering whether this is going to have a further negative effect on the share price of Maxis, especially the fact that, you know, what can the Indian authorities do if you don't want to
give up, right?
If you don't want to deliver AK or Ralph Marshall, right? What can they do? They can can they cancel a spectrum in India? That's the question,
okay,
right?
Because so if there's risk there.
If you have obtained this through means that are not very above board, can the Indian authorities, for example, cancel your spectrum over there in India? And this would be something for investors in Maxis to consider.
And that spectrum, of course, is extremely lucrative for Aircel because of the 2G spectrum that they are operating in. Even though India is very advanced in terms of the 3G capabilities, LTE capabilities, there's still a lot more consumers on the 2G spectrum. So if they do cancel it, I mean, if they have the powers to cancel it, it's a lot of business lost for Aircel.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.